I did not like to go home and say I was discharged, so I walked about aimlessly, and at length found myself in Regent Street. There I met my father, looking more worried than usual. "Do you think, Phil," he said, "my name is Theophilus, you could get 2 or 3 pounds from your employers?" Maintaining a discreet silence regarding what had passed, I answered, "No doubt I could." "I shall be glad if you will, then, my boy, for we are badly in want of it." I did not ask him what was the special trouble. There was always something, but I thought, if ever I marry, we will keep within our means. And then there rose up before me a vision of Patty, my cousin, the blithest, prettiest, and most useful, most sensible girl that ever made sunshine in a poor man's house. My father and I had parted when all at once an idea occurred to me. I would hoist Mr. Fryer on his own petard. I would go to Mr. Carrison and make my offer direct. I hailed a passing omnibus and was ere long in the heart of the city. Like other great men, Mr. Carrison was difficult of access. The clerk to whom I applied for an audience told me plainly that I could not see him at all. I might send in my message if I liked, and no doubt it would be attended to. I said I meant to wait till I did see him. I was told that he could not have people waiting about the office in this way. I said I supposed I might stay in the street. Carrison didn't own that, I suggested. The clerk advised me not to try that game, or I might get locked up. I said I would take my chance of it. After that, we went on arguing when we were suddenly silenced by a grave-looking individual. "What is all this noise about?" Before anyone could answer, I spoke up. "I want to see Mr. Carrison, and they won't let me." "What do you want with Mr. Carrison?" "I will tell that to himself only." "Very well, say on. I am Mr. Carrison." For a moment I felt abashed and almost ashamed, but then my native audacity came to the rescue. "I wanted to speak to you about Ladlow Hall, if you please, sir." In an instant the fashion of his face changed.
"Ladlow Hall? And what have you got to say about Ladlow Hall?"
"That is what I wanted to tell you, sir," and a dead hush seemed to fall on the office.
"Come this way, then,"
he said abruptly, and next minute I was in his private office.
"Now what is it?"
he asked, flinging himself into a chair. I began and told my story straight through. I concealed nothing. He heard me to the end, then he sat silent, thinking, and at last he spoke.
"You have heard a great deal of conversation about Ladlow, I suppose?"
"No, sir, I have heard nothing except what I have told you."
"And why do you desire to strive to solve such a mystery?"
"If there is any money to be made, I should like to make it, sir."
"How old are you?"
22 last January."
"And how much salary had you at Frimpton's?"
£20 a year."
"Huh! More than you are worth, I should say."
"Mr. Fryer seemed to imagine so, sir, at any rate."
"Well, what do you think?" he asked, smiling in spite of himself.
"I think I did quite as much work as the other clerks."
"That is not saying much, perhaps."
I was of his opinion, but I held my peace.
"You will never make much of a clerk, I'm afraid. You don't like desk work."
"Not much, sir."
"I should judge the best thing you could do would be to emigrate."
"Mr. Fryer said I had better go to Australia or
where?"
"The devil, sir." He laughed. He lay back in his chair and laughed. And I laughed myself, though ruefully. We went on talking for a long time after that. He asked me all about my family, and in fact put more questions than I can well remember.
"It seems a crazy thing to do, and yet I feel disposed to trust you. The house is standing perfectly empty. I can't live in it, and I can't get rid of it. You won't be able to find out anything, I know, because, of course, others have tried to solve the mystery ere now. Still, if you like to try, you may. I will make this bargain with you. If you would like to go down, I will pay your reasonable expenses for a fortnight. And if you do any good for me, I will give you a £10 note for yourself. Of course, I must be satisfied that what you have told me is true. Do you know anybody in the city who would speak for you?"
I could think of no one but my uncle. I hinted to Mr. Carrison he was not grand enough or rich enough, perhaps.
What, Robert Dorland of Cullum Street? If he will go bail for your good behavior, I shan't want any further guarantee. Come along.
And to my intense amazement, he rose, put on his hat, walked me along the pavements till we came to Cullum Street.
Do you know this youth, Mr. Dorland?
He said, standing in front of my uncle's desk.
Of course I do, Mr. Carrison, answered my uncle, a little apprehensively. He is my nephew.
And what is your opinion of him?
Do you think he is a young fellow I may safely trust?
That depends on what you wish to trust him with. A long column of addition, for instance.
It would be safer to give that task to somebody else.
Oh, uncle! I had really striven to conquer my natural antipathy to figures.
Tell me what you wish the boy to do, Mr. Carrison, and I will tell you whether he will suit your purpose or not. I know him, I believe, better than he knows himself.
He wants to go and shut the open door at Ladlow for me. Do you think he can do that?
I thought, Mr. Carrison, is quite settled no one could shut it.
I did not set your nephew the task he fancies he would like to undertake.
Have nothing to do with it, Phil.
You don't believe in ghosts, do you, Mr. Dorland?
Don't you, Mr. Carrison?
Something in the way those two men looked at each other stayed my tongue.
If you ask me the question here in the heart of the city, Mr. Dorland, I answer no.
But if you were to put it to me on a dark night at Ladlow, I should beg time to consider. I do not believe in supernatural phenomena myself, and yet the door at Ladlow is as much beyond my comprehension as the ebbing and flowing of the sea.
And you can't live at Ladlow.
I can't live at Ladlow, and what is more, I can't get anyone else to live at Ladlow.
And you want to get rid of your lease?
I want so much to get rid of my lease that I told Friar I would give him a handsome sum if he could induce anyone to solve the mystery. Is there any other information you desire, Mr. Dorland?
I don't think so. It is for the boy to say what he will do. If he be advised by me, he will stick to his ordinary work in his employer's office and leave ghost-hunting and spirit-laying alone.
Mr. Carrison shot a rapid glance in my direction.
I can't stick to my work there any longer. I got my marching orders today.
And what had you been doing, Phil?
I wanted 10 pounds to go and lay the ghost.
At that, both Mr. Carrison and my uncle broke out laughing.
10 pounds? Why, Phil, boy, I had rather, poor man though I am, have given thee 10 pounds than that thou shouldst go ghost-hunting or ghost-laying.
What will you do, Edlid? You hear what your uncle says. Give up the enterprise.
And what I say?
I do not want either to bribe or force your inclinations.
I will go, sir. I am not afraid, and I should like to show you...
I stopped. I had been going to say, I should like to show you I am not such a fool as you all take me for. Mr. Carrison looked at me curiously. I think he supplied the end of the sentence for himself, but he only answered,
I should like you to show me that door fast shut. At any rate, if you can stay in the place alone for a fortnight, you shall have your money.
I don't like it, Phil. I don't like this freak at all.
I'm sorry for that, uncle, for I mean to go.
When?
Tomorrow morning.
Give him 5 pounds, Dorland, please, and I will send you my check. You will count to me for that sum, you understand.
A sovereign will be quite enough.
You will take 5 pounds and account to me for it. Also, you will write to me every day. If at any moment you feel the thing too much for you, throw it up. Good afternoon.
And without more formal leave-taking, he departed.
It is of no use talking to you, Phil, I suppose.
I don't think it is. You won't say anything to them at home, will you?
I am not very likely to meet any of them, am I? I suppose I shall not see you again before I start, so I'll bid you goodbye now.
Goodbye, my lad. I wish I could see you a bit wiser and steadier.
I did not answer him. My heart was very full, and my eyes too.